I can fly you out to Paris. What's up, y'all? Welcome to another episode of Convos with Manny. The whole premise of this show is I want y'all to eavesdrop on conversations that I have with my homies, and as raw as it can be, as real as it can be, and I think I have a good amount of amazing friends that I love to converse with. And today, one of my homies that we go way yep. back to way Southeastern back. University, our way alma back. Mater, my way boy back. Jeremy Dunn, aka J Dizzo, in the hizzo.
Some dude wearing capris and a purple silk shirt cutting my hair. Dude, when was the last time you cut somebody's hair? I was thinking about that the other day.
I don't cut hair no more. I think Brandon.
Why?
B's hair. I cut his hair a couple times, and yeah, I just don't. Man, it's one of those things where I used to need it for money, and now I don't need it for money. So I'm like, I ain't trying to do stuff.
You can't hide that under a bushel. That's like telling a singer they're not able to sing anymore. You can't. You gotta do something.
Dude, I can't, man. If y'all don't know, we went to this college, Southeastern University, which is at that time, it was still a Christian college. Now it's a university, liberal arts university, I think it is.
More mainstream,
yeah. And we met in music theory class.
No, we didn't.
It wasn't
music
theory? No,
we met with the haircut.
It was haircut.
I moved from Ohio to Florida. I was at school. I needed to get my haircut. I walk out of my dorm in the lobby area of the dorm. You're literally cutting the entire basketball team's hair.
Oh, yeah.
Which, if you know anything about college basketball teams, the vast majority of them are not Caucasian. So, if they're good.
Yeah.
So, I walk out, and I'm like, oh, well, I don't need to get a haircut now. And so, I was like, hey, I need a haircut, too. Do you mind cutting my hair? And I felt like it was probably one of the most racist moments in my life. But I was like, because, everybody's black and Manny's Hispanic. And I was like, do you cut a white guy's hair? And then the record scratched and everybody stared at me and I was like, oh no. And I was like, hey, I was going to go to the ATM. Is it okay if you cut me now? And then I'll hit you back when I see you on campus. And you're like, oh yeah, that's cool. And you're actually dressed kind of normal. But then the next time I saw you in the music intro class, you were wearing like these linen capris with like this purple silk shirt. And I'm like, oh man, I let this gay guy cut my hair. What in the world's going on? Like, what is happening? I just moved from Ohio and I had still a lot of that Midwest mindset.
Yeah. So, oh, my God. Everybody thought I was gay when I was in Bible college. I was in my Versace phase and I was wearing but capris. And it was that was when sandals were big for guys, but not like Abercrombie sandals or sandals or like thongs. It was those ones that cover all your toes, they're super fancy.
There's a lot of things I will always have your back in. You wearing sandals is never one of them. Okay, you just have to admit the mistakes of your past.
Yeah, I don't think my feet are that pretty. But I remember that was also when I was like, I was so about my convictions. I didn't charge for haircuts. I let people just donate because I found out that it was illegal to charge. So I was like, you know what? Just everybody can just donate.
Whatever the Lord puts on your heart, brother. Yeah,
and I remember...
Hit me back.
I remember I was trying to be so spiritual when I did that. And I remember I was like, Jesus, do you think somebody will actually try me on this? And somebody did.
I'm sure a lot of people did.
No, it was one dude. And I don't know if you remember him. I don't want to shout his name out. His name was Kenny. Anyway, he came and he was like, oh, for real? Thanks, bro. And he walked away.
God bless you.
I was so angry, but I remember the Lord was like, man, if you're doing this for the right reasons, you can't get mad. And I didn't. I was like, all right, cool. But everybody else always paid me. So that was my...
But then you went to a minimum.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what the Lord puts on your heart, but the minimum the Lord's going to put on your heart is $10. I already prayed about it. Don't even worry about it. I already prayed for you. Prayed about all of it. We're good.
$10. Oh my God. And 2 decades later, we're still friends. It's pretty amazing. And when I always get hit up when I talk about finances, because I'm into real estate. I'm into making money and saving money and helping people with money. And Jay Dizzo went to school for, what was your degree? It was business. Yeah.
Yeah, so I got an undergraduate in finance and my master's in accounting.
Okay, so yeah, so good with numbers, good with money, and I thought, man, I'd love to talk about some basic principles on money when it comes to you being a single person and then you being within a relationship, because money is one of those things that is extremely volatile when it comes to being in a relationship. Yes. And if you ain't got that junk figured out when you're single, it's going to be a mess when you get married. So
yes.
Do you have any, like, if you were to ask somebody, if somebody ask you, hey man, what's the best thing I can do financially? What's like a go-to, how do you say, mantra for you? Like, do you have a go-to mantra on how to spend slash save money? Let me tell you mine so that way you can know yours. Or do you have it? Do you have yours?
Go ahead, let's hear it.
Okay, mine is always...
My mantra?
Yeah. Do you have like one?
You tell me.
Okay, so I always have one when people ask me, yo, how do you deal with finances? And I'm like, okay, when it comes to buying anything, if you don't have double in the bank, or some say if you can't buy it twice, don't buy it. That's a safe mantra for anyone trying to buy anything.
That's bad advice.
Yeah.
That's bad advice.
Except for houses. Advice. Houses is where I detour. But house, because who the hell has freaking $500,000 laying around, you know, to buy a house? So house is different, but everything else, even I like to press it to a car. And here's why, because I had a conversation with a friend once and he was telling me, hey man, I got $1,500 coming in and do I buy drums or do I buy a computer? And I was like, oh, okay, cool. How much do you have in the bank? And he says, I just told you I have $1,500. So I was like, wait. So you're going to spend the $1,500 that come in, the only $1,500, on one of these two things? He's like, yeah. I was like, you can't afford it. And he's like, what do you mean? The drums cost this and the computer cost this. I was like, yeah, but after you spend it, what will you have left in the case of an emergency? What happens if the computer breaks? What happens if you have to replace this? What happens if you get sick? What happens if you, any of these things, and you have zero reserves? What are you going to do? You cannot afford it unless you can buy it twice. Half stays in the one half stays in the bank, and then the rest you can spend. And that's kind of been like a safety, at least a precautious way of going about life to where I don't overextend myself.
Yeah, I think life is full of different things that happen. You never foresee your plan for tragedy, right? So you could have had your entire life be this perfect financial picture, you know, but if you don't plan for cancer, right, if you don't plan to lose your job, you know, there's all sorts of things that go into it. To me, because you have people all over the spectrum, right? So I also try to be fair to the idea that I've been gainfully employed my entire adult life post-college, and I've never had to go without a job. You've been very fortunate, very blessed in your life, but also you've been somebody that's always had a natural knack and understanding of the way things work. Mm-hmm. So just like in the rap game, you know, you have a talent for that, but you also crafted your skill. There are certain people that just don't have a talent for it. A talent for it. So it's like, and I know that's one thing for me that I've tried to at least express to other people, or even in my job and when I'm working, because the vast majority of people you interact with don't have a sophisticated understanding of finances. They don't understand why you're making decisions the way you're making them. They don't understand that the company has 5, 10, 20, 25% overhead that actually goes to all these other things that support what they're doing. The best thing I've had, whether I'm dealing with somebody that makes a lot of money or somebody that makes a little bit amount of money, is identify your spending habit. Everybody that's anybody has a spending habit. And then as you identify your spending habit, create a matching or a substituting saving and or investing habit. Again, so in the companies that I work for, I've always kind of been on the financial side. It amazes me how many people, their company have a 401k matching plan and they don't max it out 100%. And that's the easiest free money life will ever give you.
Right.
So what do I mean when I say a spending plan? How much a month do you spend on Starbucks? How much a month do you spend on a hobby, golf? How much a month do you spend on vacations or travel? How much money do you spend a month on eating out? You know, just the smallest little tweak in a spending habit and saying, you know what, here's this habit that I've let creep up in my life that I'm expensing way too much money, that I don't feel that return. And for the money I make or the money I have, it doesn't match. Right. So I got to change it. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to budget that and control that, where maybe I, like for me, I'm a big coffee guy. I could go to Starbucks every day and never really think about it. But again, I'm kind of cheap on certain things, and certain things I have no problem spending the money on. Coffee is one of those things I'm cheap on, because I can go to Starbucks and buy a regular black coffee for $2.50, 15 cents every day of my life. And over the course of the month, that's over $60. Or I can go buy a pound bag of the most bomb coffee at your local roaster, you know, for $15 a week, spend the same amount of money and get a much better kind of return on my money as far as the enjoyment of life.
Right.
So then you can flip that, and you can also look at, okay, what's my saving habit? What's my investing habit? And how do I identify that? So one family I was dealing with in particular very closely, they were a low income family. They had a bunch of kids, no idea what they were thinking with their finances and their family, but that was their situation. And every day the husband on his way to work would stop by the gas station and get a Dr. Pepper. And on the way home from work would stop by the gas station and get a Dr. Pepper. And when you think about spending $1, you know, 30 twice a day, you think, well, it's $2.60. Who cares? Okay. But when you really apply that to an investment over a 30, 40, 50 year career and the money that that makes, it's totally different. You know, the easy one to pick on is you look at the spending habit of smoking cigarettes and spending $6 a day on a pack of cigarettes, or $6 every other day on a pack of cigarettes. And then you look at the savings potential of that and investing that money. And it's literally a totally different life. Wow. And I think for me, and we're both like this, we're both down the road thinkers, where we want things now, but we also realize if I got to put in the work for years to get that thing, then I'm going to do it and I'm good.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things that, like, when, you know, somebody looks at you and I, we are polar opposites. Our culture, are a lot of our likes, a lot of our, like, there's so much about you and I that are polar opposites, but there's also certain things about you and I that we are so on the same wavelength about. But the vast majority of people, they don't have that mindset. It's really hard for them to not look at what they have in terms of money as something they should just use right now, and not look at it as, wait a minute, I want to change the relationship my entire family has with money.
Yeah.
So when I make financial decisions, I'm not thinking about, you know, what's my next car necessarily? What's my next watch? What's my next trip? What's my next whatever? I'm thinking about, how do I position myself in a way that allows my two kids, Sophia and Anchor, to have a different relationship with money than I had growing up.
Yeah.
And again, you and I both know this. If your behaviors don't match your desires, then just stop.
Right.
Just stop.
Right.
So if you want something, Siri's yelling at me, but if you want something to be different, you have to find a way to establish different habits. If you're overweight and you're unhealthy and you're not happy, you have to eat something different. You have to go sweat at a gym. You have to sleep right. You have to lower your stress level. If you want more money, you have to raise your market value. You have to be strict with yourself and disciplined with yourself, and you have to create accountability. So yeah. Those avenues of creating success are the same when it comes to money, and your habits will tell you everything you need to know.
You know, it's funny.
I had a friend, sorry, not to cut you off, but this is another story. So I had a friend on the other side. The last 2 years in real estate, he's crushed it. Just home run, crushed it. At the end of last year, he basically comes to me and he's like, dude, I made more money than I ever thought was even possible in my lifetime, and I literally had nothing to show for it.
Wow.
Because none of the habits changed. The more that came in, the more that just got expensed on the habits. And people think like money is this magic bullet. Like, oh, if I make X, then I'll have enough to, no. Your habits will always follow you.
Yeah. You know, I've it's funny because something in my family that I've tried to teach is accountability. I noticed that you said that. And that's something that people don't like. They do not like accountability when it comes to money, because somehow they feel as if you're treating them like a child. Like, I go make this money, I should be able to spend it how I see fit. And it's something that I remember I would always talk to my brother about. And I'm like, I have this rule for anyone who tries to ask me for money, because I've gotten burned a lot of times on a lot of money, you know? I have this rule now that it's like, if you're not asking me advice on how to spend your money, don't ask me for money, because I cannot support your bad habits, especially if I don't know them. But when I tell people, accountability is one of the best things for finances, to run it by at least 2 to 3 people that you trust financially. All my deals go through 2 to 3 eyes, no matter what, no matter how slammed up. I just did it today. I'm putting an offer on a house in Nashville to flip. And
you didn't call me.
I have so many people. You're like,
it's somebody else.
And I send it to my mortgage guy. I send it to my business manager. And I'm thinking, let me just move forward. It's a typical deal. You know, I know the purchase price. I know the whatever. I'm buying cash, whatever. Let's just roll with it. And I'm like, but let me just wait till my business manager. It's only a night. She hits me up and she goes, do you know that it says that if the seller's agent or if the seller doesn't offer the 3% to your agent, that you have to pay for it? I was like, no, I did not. I did not know that was there, because I've never seen anyone add that.
Right.
And she was like, yeah, it's there. And the agent made a mistake. She wasn't trying to like whatever. She's like, this is just something that I put in, because I'm going in business with the agent, her and her husband. They do flipping. So she's like, I totally didn't mean it. I'll fix that and send it right back. But if it wasn't an agent that was that kind and it was somebody trying to get over on me, I wouldn't have known, because there's one thing about me is like, the reason I have a business manager and the reason I put 3 eyes on everything is because I'll read, but a lot of times you can just make a simple mistake. And that's what I did. I just didn't see that. I didn't know to look for it. My business manager, all she does is look for stuff like that. So she'll tell me stuff and I'll be like, oh my God, I did not know. I didn't know. And the same thing on my last deal. So now I've just accustomed myself, even though I'm good with money, even though I have money, I need 2 or 3 eyes just to catch my humanity and the mistakes that I made. And so I don't understand why people don't feel like accountability is a value. Most people feel like, I don't want you to tell me how to spend this money. I only want you to help me if I run out. And I cannot get down with anyone that thinks that way, because I'm supporting a bad habit.
How I feel.
Sure. Sure. And it's happened to
me. I'm right.
It's happened to my family, you know, and I love my family, but if anything happened to me and my wife, I couldn't go to my family. You know? I mean, my dad's done good. He retired as an army guy, so he has a pension. He makes enough money a month on his 2 pensions to never have to work again. So I'm proud of my pops. But he doesn't make enough money to support me if one of these dreams goes sideways. You know, he makes enough for him and my mom, and I'm so grateful. And I bought them a house so they can live as free as they want to live with their money, ball out. I told him, get a boat. He has a BMW now. He's never had a car with air conditioning until I bought him his first BMW. They're just very simple people. But even them, they refuse to ask me for advice, and it lands them in bad situations. So the first BMW I got them, I bought it cash. They didn't have no payment. When that one finally broke down, I told them, let's get you a new one. I'm gonna put $8,000 down on this thing. Your lease will be like $400, $350, something cheap, so you're good, right? They don't tell me the lease runs out and they go to the dealership. And my dad is the type of person who's very relational. He's very like, oh, I got a guy at BMW.
He's good.
His name is Jim. He's good. He treats me good when I'm
He wears
there.
A gold watch, but he doesn't make any money on my deals.
super like.
Jim just crushed you, bro.
He feels so good that he knows their name and they know his, you know?
Yeah.
So he'll, in that spirit, he'll fall into dumb deals. So second time around, he ends up renewing a lease, except this time he doesn't have the $8,000 down. He just goes into the lease and he's paying $750 a month for this damn X1. So yeah. I don't find out until I tell him, hey, move out to LA because, you know, we're going to build a house and we're going to have you guys live with us. And he's like, oh, I got to wait till this lease is up. You know, I'm like, why? He's like, I'm paying $750 a month. I was like, what the? Why would you ever do that? The only reason I told you to get a BMW before is because I was helping you. It's only $350. You make more than enough. Now you're paying double.
Yeah.
Because you didn't pick up the phone and just say, hey, Joe, this is, I was going to renew my lease and the new payment's going to be $750. I would have been like, stop. Go to Honda. Go to Subaru. Yeah,
it's time.
Go to Toyota. You can get a lease for $250 or less. Do not spend $750 on a car that you don't really care about. Like, it's cool that you have a BMW, but you're not like, son, I really want a BMW. You just did it because I got it for you. But that's how most people think. They don't want accountability.
And when you really start, again, I think it goes back to, like you're saying, accountability, your habits, the people that you're allowing to share your goals with and have a voice in your life, because they'll call you out if it doesn't match. When I got to, so I remember I started doing really good in my career. My daughter was 3 years old and we went to Disney World. And I had more money in my bank account than I ever thought possible. And I had all these plans of, I'm going to spoil my baby. Mm. I'm going to go off at Disney World. And I walked in and you know what took over? My habit. I was like, how much for that ice cream cone? Honey, we'll go to TCBY. How much for that dress? I just bought it on Amazon. It'll be here in 2 days. Like, how much you get your hair did? We'll go somewhere else. Like I walked in with the intent of just going, you know, just spending all this money, not even thinking about like, oh, it's time, whatever. And I got so like by the second day we were packing our lunches. Like it was cheap. Like I'm telling Britt, I'm like, put that in your purse. You know, we got to sneak this in. How are we going to do this? And it, you know, but it was all about the habits.
Sure.
And those habits matter a lot because I'm going to be honest with you. Yeah. Driving a BMW is cool. Until you realize, you know, the cost difference in all of it.
Yeah.
And you realize, you know, what am I expensing in my future? What am I expensing in what I want out of life for this bad purchase?
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is, you know, buying a car for a lot of people, and this is something that's just a pride thing, an issue thing that almost everybody deals with, but buying a car for a lot of people is almost like a trip to Vegas where everybody tells you how great they did, mm-hmm. but it's like, I mean, obviously outside of like the COVID stuff and the travel restrictions, like Vegas was doing great.
Yeah.
Those dealerships are doing great.
Yeah.
Those cars are only getting more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're not getting as good of a deal as you thought you were. And so for some people, it's hard just to be honest and have the humility to really address that. And I think one of the challenges that most people think, again, it goes back to, you know, you're flashing your watch around and you're talking about the $8,000 toward your parents and stuff like that. And some people, you know, they'll never be in a position to do that, but it doesn't mean you can't have a very successful, healthy financial future.
Yeah.
I remember, so I worked at a Toyota dealership and I was kind of running, this Toyota store and these people walked in. And I had heard that they were a mail carrier, postal worker. I don't know, whatever you call them. But anyway, you know, didn't really make that much money. And they were looking at this like $55,000 SUV. And so I kind of overheard the conversation. So I said something to the sales guy and I'm like, hey, you know, go ahead and get a credit app. You know, you don't want to get too deep into this deal and turn out, you know, they have bad credit. And I felt really dumb. But he turned and talked to the person and he comes back up and I'm like, you don't have a credit app. Why don't you have a credit app? And he's like, they're paying cash. And so even still, like these people, you know, they found a way to be financially healthy, you know? So mm-hmm. I think some people, they think, oh, well, I don't make enough. So it's just going to be well, that's not true though either.
Yeah.
It's not true.
You know, I was literally before this, I don't know if I was subconsciously gearing up for this conversation, but I'm listening, rereading Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Okay.
And he's talking about one of the things that he noticed is that poor people say, I can't afford it. And then rich people say, how can I afford it? And the reason is because when you say I can't afford it, your mind shuts off after that. Once you say I can't afford it, it's like, oh, it's gone. It's out of your whatever. When if you say, how can I afford it? Your mind continually thinks, well, let me figure this out. If this is something that I want slash need, let me figure out how to do this responsibly. You know, and when it comes to car purchases, if you're out there thinking about a car or bought a car, this is something I realized as I was researching my cars. You know, the first 2 years are going to be the maximum amount of time where the car takes its biggest hit on its value. The first 2 years will tank it. The next massive drop will be when it hits 60,000 miles. So going into understanding that, I was like, oh, so I should be looking at a 3-year-old car that has less than 60,000 miles on it. And that's when I bought my BMW 2018 with only 1,400 miles on it. You know what I'm saying? So it's a strong, it's gonna maintain most of its value because it's already seen the biggest drop. When it was new, it was 84,000. I got it at 58, something like that. So it took its big hit. I should be able to drive it for a year or two and get most of my money back. And that was just like, just little stuff that people don't tell you. Never buy, I don't want to say never buy a new car, but if you're in a position where you're like really penny pinching, like ease up on the new car. Go 3 years, 4 years old. Just make sure it has less than 60,000 miles and you'll be good to go. You know what I'm saying? Little things like that I'm still just learning now. I always knew buying a new car is like the worst. Unless you just got FU money. Unless you're
It doesn't have to be though. You got to know how to play the game. It doesn't have to be.
Meaning what?
Because I'm on the other side where I've only bought, as far as my adult life, when I've been in control, I've only bought new cars.
But you buy them and you stay in them. You stay in them until what? Most your average, it feels like your average is what? You're in a car for 5 years at least?
No, not even.
I don't see you switching out
5 years since like college. I switch out of cars probably every 2 to 3 years.
So you're absorbing that hit.
No.
Okay, explain to me.
No.
Break it down.
No. I'm gonna teach you. I'm gonna learn you.
Break it down.
You have to know the cost benefit analysis of the vehicle.
Okay.
So after 3 years, your standard maintenance is kind of out the window. Like in your setting, you still had a bunch of warranty left, but you still have the time frame on the warranty coming.
Yeah.
So why are you buying that vehicle and which vehicle are you looking at in particular? If you're looking at a vehicle that is just a run-of-the-mill regular vehicle, yes, you're going to eat that depreciation. But there are vehicles out there that are kind of like anomalies.
Sure.
And so I was kind of in like the automotive game for a while and I got pretty deep in it, but there's vehicles out there that just make a lot of sense or no brainers, or you look at, you know, maybe the incentives at the time or whatever. But the challenge in that is it takes such a sophisticated knowledge because also the car game is very market dependent. So right now, because the market's hot and people have extra cash because of the stimulus, new cars are selling, used cars are selling.
Yeah.
So the supply of those are down because you're not making any more used cars other than what you buy and drive and then trade in. And so the price of that's going up. So if I needed to buy a vehicle right now, you could buy a vehicle. Manufacturers don't want to lose money and they don't want to lose unit volume. So they're going to produce and try to sell as many vehicles as possible. But right now, because everybody has spending money and everybody's buying vehicles, it's a really bad time to buy a vehicle. So the last vehicle I traded in, I got very fortunate. I kind of timed up the market a little bit, but I had this particular truck and it was kind of a limited trim level that you couldn't get.
Was it a Tacoma?
No, it was a Tundra. It was the TRD Pro Tundra.
Okay, because the Tacomas be freaking selling well. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. No. Tundras and Tacomas are unbelievable. They're unbelievable. But I had a TRD Pro Tundra. It was a great truck. Probably my favorite vehicle of all time. Probably my favorite vehicle for the rest of my life. Absolutely loved it. And my kids loved it because there was so much room in the back seat. But with that particular vehicle, Toyota makes so few of them, they kind of do the supply and demand game where they only produce a certain number of them.
Sure.
And so on the used car market, because there's so few TRD pros out there, they hold their value extremely well. So I could afford, let's say, the monthly nut of the payment, which was an expensive payment, But by the time I traded it back in and got my equity back, I had spent under, I think it worked out to, I had spent $212 a month to drive that Tundra for 30 months.
And how much was the original payment?
It was like $767 or something like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, what you're talking about, I understand because I'm from the Porsche world. So Porsche holds its value like crazy. Not all Porsches, the 911.
Top two cheapest manufacturers to own. Porsche number one, Toyota number two. That's something else you got to learn if you're going to buy a vehicle.
Yeah. And I mean, I noticed that because I'm always buying used Porsches. You know, I just bought a 2011 that was $85,000.
You're so bougie.
But I bought it because now, look, I got out of my lease, my new 2018 Porsche. I was paying $2,300 a month on it, right? So at the beginning of the pandemic, I was like, why am I spending $2,300 on this Porsche? It's only going down. So I was like, let me sell it and buy one of the Porsches that's going up. So I got rid of that car. Right? I got rid of my 06 and I bought a 2011 GTS. Hella rare. Ooh. 84 grand it caught me and it cost me. And it's only going up. My 2011 Turbo, only going up. My 89.
Why do you keep showing your watch while you're doing that?
I'm sorry. My 89.
Rolling on my wrist, only going up. Only going up. I buy appreciating assets. That's what I do.
I'm selling all new stuff.
You're so bougie.
I'm like, I only want to make money now. And I'm over the losing money game. But you're right. For the people, though, what I'm saying is my advice is for the people who cannot buy that one car that it's like, yo, this one's going to hold. You know, it's the same thing they told me about my M4 because they're, you know, BMW doesn't make a ton of M4s or a ton of M3s.
M's are good.
Yeah, it's a solid thing. But if you can't afford that, it is best and wisest to buy three year old, under 60,000 miles.
Anything and everything is a market. And so when you're spending any money on anything, you have to look at how do I make my money go further? Yeah. So I can give two people, you know, let's say X number of dollars. Two people are going to approach that very differently. And some people just know how to make their money work and some people don't. Some people like a lot of little items. Some people like one big nice item. And either way, whatever your kind of spending or your money personality is, you can still have success either way as long as you're willing to be patient, which I also think is half of the battle.
Yeah.
To be successful in the money game, unless you just have it or you're getting it or whatever, you have to understand how to be patient.
Yeah.
You have to understand how to think in terms of years and not days and months.
It's so true because that's how real estate
is. It's really hard.
Real estate, they always teach you like, yo, this is a long game. This isn't like short. You got to accrue property and actual wealth. You're not talking, oh man, I didn't do it in 2 years. Fool, you're talking about 10. You're talking about 15. Like you're talking about slow and steady wins the race in this thing. Those who try to get rich quick usually find themselves in a hard line. And that's what I'm realizing now. It's like, be patient, bruh. Cause I'm starting to do the flip game now. And it's really about, oh my God, be patient. Don't be upset cause you missed this property or this property. Just be patient. The time will come. You know, one thing I also noticed that people have the problem with money is I always say something I struggle with was a poor man's mentality. Mm-hmm. Because I was raised not with a lot, I was always afraid of two things, not making enough or losing what I made. It didn't matter how much money is in the account. This mindset didn't change. When there wasn't enough in the account, it would be like, man, I'm never going to make enough to make it. When there's a lot in the account, oh my God, please, Jesus, don't let anything happen to where I lose it.
Yeah.
So I had a very poor person mentality. It was always just a fear of money as opposed to understanding the money. And I think a lot of people find themselves making decisions based on that fear. Again, I can't afford as opposed to how can I afford? How can I make this money work for me and stop working for the money? I tell people all the time, you know, the definition of being wealthy is not necessarily how much money you have, but how long you can go without working. So if you're able to accrue, Siri. If you're able to accrue something like, and I break it down for them real simple. I'm like, look, you can, if you're telling me you can get a house, like my friend has a house in Cleveland and you know, his mortgage is $400 a month. He has a car that's $250 a month, right? Nice. Or wherever you live, right? expenses, everything, let's say his expenses, you know, a month, maybe $2,500. So if you can work hard enough to buy yourself two rental properties and pay them down, you may live a little chill. Maybe you're living in a one-bedroom apartment or two-bedroom apartment, and you're just keeping it at $750 a month, $1,000 a month, and you're making way more than that, but you're just focusing on these two properties, buying them, paying them down. Depending on where they're at, let's take mine, for example, in Nashville. I can make, on both of my properties, I was making $1,850 on one townhome and $2,300 on another.
Like you were netting, or that was your monthly rent that you were
paying? One, I was netting because I paid it cash. The other one, I was making $500 a month on. I could have paid both cash. I paid both cash. I just took a loan out on one of them. But if my, that's because my goals were different. But if my goal was, if I was thinking, okay, I have this much overhead, I want to live for free, I would have just kept both paid off because I bought both of them in cash. So I would have been netting back about $4,100 a month. If I can manage to get my life under $4,100 a month and not exceed it, not do anything dumb, get a house with a mortgage that's $1,200, get a car, pay it off, $250 a month, I can, you know, manage it. I can essentially live for free if I don't get caught up in the, I need this. I got a ball, whatever. That's a possibility. Am I saying that's people's dreams? No, but it's that easy or simple to assess your life. Like you said, your spending habits, where do you want to live? Where do you want to stop? At what point do you want to stop? At what point can you just say, I'm okay with this, this, and this? I'm not saying that I'm going to stop investing or I'm going to stop whatever. And if I want to keep working, I can work. But these couple of investments are paying for my living. I can stop whenever I want. Mm-hmm. And there's something beautiful in that. The problem that I see is most people acquire, buy without the sense of need. And then they end up having to work.
Yeah.
I was one of those people, you know. I would acquire a lot and I would just think, oh, I just work, pay it off. Now I'm like, as the older I get, I'm like, I just want to simplify my life. Mm-hmm. I really don't want a $4 million house. I'll take a $1 million house that I can pay it off, and just chill. I know, million sounds a lot.
For those
I'm sorry.
Of you that don't know where you live,
I live in LA.
You're talking about that LA real estate market.
I live in LA. So, that was not a bougie comment.
Midwest. That was not the Midwest real estate.
I know. I just lost half of my audience.
Yeah, we should translate. He's talking about like a $250,000 house.
Anywhere else.
In Ohio. Yes.
Anywhere else. A million dollar house in LA is 1,800 square feet. It's nothing big, nothing fancy. Right. So. I'm satisfied in that because what I'm realizing over life, I'm placing value, I'm reassessing, right? I'm reassessing what is valuable to me. And what I've learned is what is valuable to me is experience. I need to be able to travel and create memories because to this day, these are the most fondest moments in my life. I like watching movies. Super simple. I love my cars. Like I love old cars.
But to none be fair, of these things. One caveat on this conversation that we didn't add, did the disclaimer, you don't have any kids.
Correct. But again, that's assessing your life. That's assessing my life.
Yes.
I have to assess what I really care about. And since I do not have kids, my cars are my kids. My dogs are my kids. I can travel whenever I want. So it's not like we're spending different money. It's not like I'm spending more on dumb things. I'm just spending on things that other people would typically spend on their kids. You know what I'm saying? Kids are expensive. You have to feed them. You have to put them in school. You have to put them through sports. All that money you're spending to do that, I'm just spending it on a car. So we're both spending money. I'm just really acutely identifying this is what's important to me. Don't waste money on dumb things anymore. Because when I realized I spent, you know, the amount I spent on shoes, I could have bought a house cash. You know, the amount that was in my closet, I could have bought a house, another house cash.
Yeah.
And I did it all responsibly, obviously, because I'm not broke. But when I think about it, I'm like, mm-hmm. I don't even have enough places to wear this stuff to. I literally don't have enough places to go. I found myself dressing up just to go for a drive. Yeah. And that's when I knew, bruh, chill. You don't need 15 Louboutins. You don't need 15 Gucci shoes. For who? Why? Yeah. Every time I wore them, sure, certain people that knew what they were would be like, yo, dope shoes. Yeah. But it was wasting money.
So to that point, I think a lot of people get themselves in trouble in spending. And this is something I try to check myself on. But a lot of people spend money because they do make a concession and it's still not what they want. And so it almost generates that appetite that they then keep spending.
Facts.
So for example, like, okay, I know I can't get the Louis or the Gucci or whatever, so I'm going to compromise and get this, but because it doesn't satisfy that itch,
or last.
Now I'm buying 10 pairs of something that would be the equivalent of that if I just would have managed everything differently.
Yes.
But also, to be fair to you, even in the clothes game, you were still very smart and you looked at it as a market and a hustle. So you weren't buying clothes just to buy them and then wear them and then lose all the value on them. You were constantly, the term like hedging your bet. You were constantly hedging what you were spending on your clothes in terms of what you could get out of them. And the one thing I would say, like in the Rich Dad, Poor Dad, one of the big differences is looking at ways that your money can work for you. And the purchase price isn't necessarily always the real cost of the item.
Correct.
So for example, I'm going to call you out because you don't know enough about watches to know the watch I'm wearing, but I'm going to call you out. You're wearing a Rolex, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you buy the right Rolex, historically, they never lose their value.
Right.
If you go buy a $500 Citizen or Bulova or whatever, in 10 years, it's not going to be worth more than the purchase price or even the purchase price.
Yeah, not even close.
In the Rolex game, they always appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge is obviously being able to afford the price of the right Rolex.
Right.
So, and a lot of times people just, they see somebody with something or they immediately draw a conclusion, but that's not necessarily the full scope. So in spending money in particular, be very clear about what you want, be very disciplined about how you're going to get it, and then get exactly what you want and don't make a concession. So like in our conversation, because obviously like in my relationship and with my family, I've always run the finances. And I've always told, particularly like with Brittany, and now the kids are kind of getting to that point, the answer is never no. If you want something, we'll make it happen. The answer is more of when and how.
Right.
And my hope is that as my kids want something, I never teach them, well, no, you can't have that because I hate that mentality.
Yeah.
It's one of the big reasons why I went into finance and accounting in the first place because, I grew up in a great family, a great home, but there I was just an ambitious kid. So I always wanted more of something that they couldn't necessarily give me from a material standpoint. And I never understood why because I also was in an environment where I was around a lot of other kids that their families had more.
Yeah.
And that drove me nuts. So I'm like, I'm going to figure this thing out. So literally when I picked a college major, I'm like, I'm going to learn about money. I'm going to study finances.
Yeah.
That's the best way I can think about this.
Yeah.
And so in that process, it wasn't really about some secret knowledge. It was just really understanding how to be disciplined, how to make those decisions. Because at the end of the day, like I came into this as a young adult being on my own, which also raises the stakes of the financial decisions I have to make because I know there's no fallback plan for me.
Right.
It's on me. There's no rich uncle I'm going to call and be like, hey, throw me, 10 grand.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen. They're going to tell me tough luck. And I got some uncles that have it, but they love me enough to say, hey, you got to figure it out. Be a grown man.
Yeah.
But for me, if I can leave this earth and give my kids and my grandkids a little bit more, and I can invest in them and teach them how to manage money the right way, and they do a little bit. Now you're talking about a generational impact that changes the game. Because my biggest concern isn't how much money can Jeremy have or what can Jeremy accomplish? My biggest concern is what kind of relationship with the world can my kids have? Can my kids look at the world and realize as long as they're passionate and they're ambitious, not like in a negative way, but ambitious in the sense of like, I'm going to go after this. I want them to know that they can be successful in any avenue they pursue.
Yeah.
And that something positive can come out of that. And that as long as they're disciplined in the other parts of life, you know, and how they manage their spiritual relationship, their body, how they manage their money, they can accrue, they can appreciate, not to be too, you know, goofy with the financial terms, over their life. And then they can contribute more to the next generation, which really, if you're looking at your finances, that's what it's about more than anything.
And see, that's why I love
next generation with more than what you have.
That's why I love that you're like this, because most people, because schools don't teach finances, they don't teach. They teach scholastic and they teach trade. You know, they don't teach what you do after you make the money. They just, it's archaic. It's archaic, first of all. The world we live in is still go to school, get a job. To me, I'm more like, let me identify, if I had a kid, I'd be like, is he creative? Because I'm going to send him to YouTube before I send him to freaking Stanford. I'm not going to shut it down. Before, when we were kids, there's no option of like, I want to play with toys, but that's, you're not going to make any money doing that. But now the number one earner on YouTube is the damn Ryan kid, who all he did was play with toys.
Don't start on Ryan.
$30 million he makes a year playing with toys. I'm sorry. I will never freaking discourage my godson right now, who I live with and I'm raising. He's like, I want to do stop motion. I was like, bruh, do it. Oh, I want to take pictures of toys. Do it, bruh. Do it. Just be consistent. Don't tell me you want to do something and then not be consistent. I will fully help you. You know, you could use my $3,000 camera and take your little pictures with your toys as long as you're committed to it, because now the game is different. The game is totally different. I would never encourage my kid, you have to go to school. Now, unless they're going to be a doctor or a lawyer, to where there's no way around this. You can't manufacture those positions. But anything else, I would say I would discourage school, because you're just going to go get in debt when 50% of kids that go to school don't even use their degree in their vocation. But the idea is, for sure, which is the same thing you're saying, which is what Rich Dad Poor Dad was saying, is just how. Instead of saying you can't, it's how. So when I looked at, when I first got married, I was buying cheap clothes. I remember the day that my wife got me a Lululemon outfit. And I found out how much it cost. I was so angry with her, because I'm used to going to Ross and TJ Maxx, and this is where I would buy my clothes, right? And I remember one time a fan saw me coming out of Ross, and they hit me up on social media, and they were like, hey, I saw you at Ross. I thought you were rich. And I was like, this is how I stay rich, fool. But I remember the day, and I was like, babe, take it back. And she was like, just try it on. And I tried it on, and I was like, my gosh, this feels so good. So I started thinking, okay, maybe I don't got it right, because I do go through 4 Ross t-shirts because of how cheap they are, or 4 Ross jeans because of how cheap they are. And I have to just keep buying more, or the fashion is so trendy that it's like, it's just not worth anything. Yeah. And I started realizing, oh my gosh, people buy used clothes. They buy it because there's a lot of people that want to be able to wear brands that they cannot afford at the store, but they're hoping they can pick up secondhand. So like what you were talking about, I started making a hustle out of clothes. I knew, okay, I'm gonna buy a pair of Louboutins. They're gonna run me about $1,000. But I know I can wear these for 2 years, turn around and sell them for $600.
Yeah.
And that's what I've done with every single lube. I think the lowest I sold a lube is probably like $550. Yeah. So I will wear Louboutins for 3 darn years, 4 years, 5 years, and still be able to sell it for $550 to $600. So actually those shoes cost me $300 to $400, which is still a lot. I don't want to presume that that's normal for people, but in the grand scheme of things, I'm not dropping the grand, you know? So a lot of times I'm picking stuff up on sale. I'm picking it up at the the high-end thrift store over here in LA, you know, where I'm buying name brands for way less. And then when I sell them, I'm selling them for double of what I bought them for. And it's usually my scheme. It's how I do it. So now I only buy things. I only buy things that I know there's a market for after I'm done with it.
Well, and a huge part of that is your putting your money in a market, in a game you understand. A lot of people lose their shirt, literally and figuratively, I guess, when they're in markets they don't understand. So just because you saw somebody play the game, and it was successful doesn't mean it's going to be successful for you.
Right.
There's so many variables. It's really hard to look at what somebody else has done and think you can just easily duplicate that. Mm-hmm. Very few things in life are carbon copies. Even identical twins on a DNA level are different.
Right.
Every snowflake is different. Just because you saw somebody play the game and you got in and play the game does not mean it's going to work the exact same for you. And you have to constantly be aware of that. So I would say, which is the part you bring up, only get in games on whatever level you're going to spend your money or do that you are truly passionate about and you're willing to be an expert in.
Facts.
If I had a question about, you know, what Porsche to buy, I would call you. If I had a question about, you know, what super high-end leather jacket to buy, I would call you. You know, I wouldn't just try to go figure it out on myself, because I could get in the game where it's like, Jeremy, you really shouldn't have bought that from that maker, because you can go over here to this store and probably find it on their, you know, their annual clearance or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like who's one of the companies? I think Nordstrom or something. Like every March or February, they do some kind of crazy sale.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I remember I started making a little bit of money. Went to New York City for the first time, wanted to buy an All Saints leather jacket. I was so proud of this leather jacket. But I had followed him for so long, because again, I'm from this small town in the Midwest. All Saints was nowhere near the Midwest at this point. This is when literally like their only US stores were like LA and New York.
Right.
And so I go, you know, this is, I don't know, 10 plus years ago. And so we go there and I go in the store, and I had timed everything up so much. Part of the reason why I went to New York on that week is because I knew that's when they did like their annual clear out sale. So I got like this like $600 leather jacket for half the price.
Yeah.
But again, it was a game that I invested all this time. I was patient and understanding that game. Like again, going back to the TRD Pro Tundra, that was a game. I understood that game.
Yeah.
I understood that game so intimately.
Yes, so that's so
I just
dope.
Didn't want to go out and buy a car because I wanted to look good in front of somebody. I don't care about looking good. Looking good at somebody goes away really, really quick. Goes away really, really quick when you realize you don't need to be driven by insecurity, which is a lot of where the spending comes from. You need to be driven by your goals.
Yeah.
And if you're getting closer to your goals, what's going to happen to your discipline?
Yeah.
It's going to go through the roof.
Sure.
Like when I start tasting blood in the water, my discipline almost goes in autopilot and it just goes to a different level.
Yeah.
The personal frustration that people are feeling or the insecurity that people are feeling is a huge part of why they can't find satisfaction on the financial side, because all the spending they're going through is more of feeding their appetite for something that they can't accomplish versus what's your goal? How are you going to accomplish your goal? And is it something you're willing to be passionate about and really dive deep into the market? So if somebody's ready to spend, you know, $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $10,000, $20,000 on a watch, there's a huge spectrum of watches they can buy. But based on their financial goals, it really narrows it down to like whatever price range you're in, you maybe have three options. Mm-hmm. And all three of those options are sold out. So you better be ready to be patient.
Yeah.
And if you can be patient instead of just wearing a brand for brand sake because you want to look cool in front of your friends, or you want to look cool at the country club, or you want to look cool when you go out with your wife, that's great. But realize you paid a premium for that. That's never coming back.
Right. I think that's so, man, it's such an essential idea and understanding of what you're talking about. And I think if I were to be 100, because I like keeping it raw and hella real on this, I did a video about this that hasn't come out yet, but I wrote a song called Honest. And I'm so proud of this song. Nobody else liked it. Didn't get a lot of streams, but
but I don't care
because I loved it. And I say something in this song that I've always thought and I wanted to say, but I never said it out loud because I didn't want people to look at me bad.
Right.
And my verse 2, listen to this, what I said. I thought when I got my presidential... For those of you who don't, you're not watch people, that's a gold Rolex. It could be platinum too. It could be whatever, but it's about a $40,000 watch with tax. I thought when I got my presidential, I would feel presidential, but nobody even noticed. 40 grand out the window. Damn. Who the hell I'm trying to impress? Spending too much. Stop the bleeding. That's a Kotex. I'm trying to shop to hide my insecurities of never making it to where I thought that I deserved to be. How the hell I work so hard, but to see my friends start to pass me. When I've been doing this twice as long, them are facts we. Never see things how they are, only how we are. And everything we do is so great, nigga Gatsby. But what if we could realize that our path was designed to give us happiness that would actually last? And so what I was saying was, like, I found myself, when I came to that realization, I was spending so that I can look like I was winning. And I was winning, but I was spending for that reason so that people would think I'm still winning. Even though I was chilling, like I wasn't touring anymore. I wasn't like in that type of world, but I was like, let me keep buying so that when people see me, they're like, oh, he's doing good. Mm-hmm. And the biggest realization was I bought that watch and nobody ever complimented me on that watch. Only like watch people, which doesn't count.
Some random weird old guys like, that's a nice presidential.
That's a nice watch. I got one at home. But nobody like normal, and that's what you want. You want people to look at you and be like, oh, this guy's successful. And nobody ever did. Yeah, and I started realizing, man, I did all these things out of my insecurities because I got friends that are still in the music game killing it. And I'm like, I was doing it 10 years longer and I never made it that far. I never made it that big. But I'm making other moves and making money, so let me at least show them, hey, even though I'm not winning in music, which is where I wanted to win, I'm winning over here. Let me show you that me and you are the same. You got a Gucci belt, I got a Gucci belt. You got Louboutins, I got Louboutins. You got Louis suitcase, I got Louis suitcase. We're the same. It was some egocentric little boy, you know, big penis contest so that I wouldn't feel left behind. And I think about it now and I'm like, how much property could I own if I didn't have all this crap?
Right.
How much property could I own?
Decisions would have been different.
It would have been different if I wasn't buying out of insecurity. Now, you know, I'm still buying cars because, again, but I switched my car game up to appreciating assets. So I know if I wanted to sell any one of my Porsches, I'm going to get all my money back, if not more. Mm-hmm. And I only want to buy old ones now. Old ones that are going up in value. So I even switched that game up. But every single thing I buy, so the new house that I'm moving into, I went from a $3 million house in the hills, sold it, and what did I buy? $1 million house in Van Nuys. For those of you who don't know LA, Van Nuys ain't the spot to be in. It's not the one that people move to LA and they're like, I want to live in Van Nuys. It's
you've
like
never this, heard that in a Jay-Z or Kanye lyric.
No,
I promise you.
You're in Van Nuys because you have to be in Van Nuys, right? But there's this little pocket of Van Nuys that is like a spot. And you will notice this if you're in real estate, you'll notice that a lot of places that are about to be gentrified or a lot of hood places have areas that if the right people come in and the right investors come in, they can turn a negative place into the most popping place. You've seen it in Brooklyn. You know, it's happening here in a lot of places. It's happening in East Nashville. There's a lot of hood that if the right people move in, they start fixing up the houses. All of a sudden, your value goes up. So I bought this $1 million house. I'm about to put $450 into it. By the time I'm done, my house should be worth, according to all the per square feet value right now, about $1.8 to $2 million. I bought it for $1 million. I put in four. I'll be all in like at about 1.5. So the day that I finish my build, I will have $500,000 in equity. Mm-hmm. That's the way I'm thinking now. As opposed to finding houses that were already remodeled and me giving someone else equity. Because someone else just did what I can do if I just look at it differently. Yeah, I'm going to have to, it's going to be 6 months of absolute inconvenience. But what the way I look at it is I'm inconveniencing myself for 6 months to make $500,000 without working a single day. I'm just inconveniencing myself. And this is what I had to sell my wife on. I'm like, babe, let's not buy the house that's already done. It's convenient. Let's buy the house that we got to put the work into because we're not really putting the work. The work was done all those days we were on the road, all those songs I wrote, all those jokes you told to amass this amount of capital that we can do this. So let's let our money work for us. So the second that we finish, we can then refinance.
Yeah.
Get our money back out and put that money to work. Unlike my last house where I had about I don't want to say the number because my wife will kill me, but I had a lot of money in my last house that wasn't making me money. And I regret it. I feel like I lost out on 5 years of like, man, I could have tripled what I made off of that. Cause I only made half a mil on selling that house. I could have made way more than that if I had that money out there working for me, you know, but you live and you learn, and this is money for you. It's always something new and you're always learning. So that's why it's important to be accountable and talk to people that have money or follow people that are business savvy, because it makes you think completely differently.
Yeah, you gotta find people that are smarter than you. You gotta find people that are living where you're living and learn from them. One of so a great mentor I had, this guy, you know, is extremely successful, had a lot of money, and he owned dealerships, and him and his wife, they never drove the nicest thing they could have at those dealerships. And him being my mentor, and when the relationship really started kicking off and I was making a little bit of money, it was always such a check in my own pride and my own humility to see what he was doing and how he was making decisions and realize, if he's my mentor, I almost don't have the right to like outshine him.
Sure.
And I made a comment, and he was a very, he had this great, incredible way of being very subtle, but holding you to accountable in like such a real way. Like, he would just ask a question and you're like, you just crumble and you're like, oh my gosh, I should have thought of that. Or, oh my, you know, just something that years and years and years of experience can only teach you how to think, not anything you learn at school. And I had made a comment, cause I was really frustrated by how things are going. And I had made a comment about, you know, purchasing something. And he said, well, I actually have three of those sitting in my closet and I never even touch them. And he's basically looking at me saying, what's your point?
Yeah.
Either figure it out and get it done or stop complaining. Cause I got it and I don't even care about it. Yeah. it was like the ultimate like mic drop, in the sense of, you know, and I love the idea of almost like the subtle flex, like be so in your game that you're flexing in your game and people that aren't in your game don't even understand what the heck's going on.
Right. Yeah.
Like a way that you're like, you know what? I'm so in this that I'm going to do it in a way that unless you are really about it, you're not even going to catch it, because I'm not trying to flex for the average person to look at me and acknowledge me. The only flex that I really try to care about, to be honest, is more of like almost like that professional competition. Right. So again, if you talk about, let's take basketball, for example, it's about who won the game. It's about who played their heart out.
Yeah.
Nothing else matters. Like, I'm a Browns fan. I'm from Ohio. I live in Florida now, but I'm a Browns fan. This past football season was incredible for me.
Yeah.
It was absolutely incredible. But guess what? Everybody that's a Browns fan hated those Progressive commercials until about the second half of this football season.
Because we were
all tired of Baker.
Yeah.
Like, you ain't winning, son, shut up.
Yeah.
And he's making all this money. He's killing the game. And I appreciate, you know, what Baker was doing. I'm glad he believed in himself, because everybody else in Cleveland was giving up.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? It was like, dude, nobody cares about your flex unless you're really going to produce.
Yeah.
And again, I also think if what you're producing is only to serve you, that's a pretty sad, pathetic way to live.
Yeah.
You should also look at not only what I'm producing is going to serve my family, it's also going to serve other people around me, which is also, I know, a mindset that we have and we're constantly thinking of. So one of the things I'm the most proud of is not necessarily what I've accomplished or what I've made or what I've done or a job title or anything like that. One of the things that I'm the most proud of are the people and the careers and the organizations and the charitable contributions that I've made through my time, that were only there because I was willing to dedicate. And I will also say this caveat: if you think any of this is going to happen in 40 hours a week, forget about it. Just forget about it. Just go ahead and admit to everybody, I'm not really that serious about my dreams and I'm just going to live this way. And just be honest. I think that's the other frustrating thing in the game. Like, if you're not being honest, you're just in the way.
Yeah.
Move out, get out of the way. Because if you think this is going to happen in a regular 40 hour work week being standard and everybody else is to blame and everybody else is the problem, you're just not being real with yourself.
Yeah.
You gotta be real. There's people, you know, again, like the travels will teach you, there's people in all walks of life that have figured it out. And there's people in all walks of life that have had every opportunity to figure it out and they've just failed. And the only real game changer is just your own personal accountability and how you want to approach this.
Yeah. Those are facts, bro. I am grateful for your thoughts, and I hope, you know, I feel like we need to do more of these to touch on like specific areas. And because obviously with money you could talk all day long, and we're just students in the game. Like, we're learning. There's people that are so far ahead of us that can out freaking talk me on anything. This was more of an introductory conversation to money, and if you guys hear it, send a message and ask specific questions, because I love to come back on with Jay and we'll do another conversation and actually answer specific questions to the best of our ability, or point you to someone or some type of resource that is way more knowledgeable than us. But the goal is to start the conversation, like every episode and every podcast, every episode in this podcast itself, the goal has always been start the conversation, never finish it for people, because to finish it implies that we know what you need, or we know what the hell we're talking about. And we are learning so much. Yeah. And I'm so grateful for that. And speaking of finances, it does take a lot to, you know, I'm grateful for my Patreon family that is joining. For those of you at the bottom tier at $2, the middle tier at $12, and all the way to the VIPs at $25. And then I'm also doing personal one-on-one coaching, and I got some clients there too. So grateful for every single person. If you don't know what Patreon is, you can click the link in the bio and you'll see how you can become a part of the family and help this thing grow and expand. And my hope is that enough of y'all, you know, this year I'm going for 1,000 people signing up for Patreon. And again, this is me thinking, this is my hustle. I think in simple ways. I think if 1,000 people will promise to give $2, more than 1,000 people listen to this podcast, $2 is nothing. They won't even remember that they signed up. It's $2. But 1,000 people, that's $2,000. I can literally pay someone to edit, pay someone to produce, you know what I'm saying? Stuff that I'm doing all myself right now. Like, after this, I'm going to go and edit this. And it takes so much time uploading, downloading. So it's crazy. But I put it before God, 1,000 people this year, Lord. I'm going to get 1,000 people to give $2 and hopefully feel that this podcast is worth $2. Hopefully you got your $2 worth out of our conversation today. If not, we'll keep trying. But I'm super grateful for every single person, even if you're not a Patreon, anyone who just lends their ear to listen to what we have to say. It's super, super special, and we're blessed for it. Dizzo, I'll be talking to you more later. I love you, bro. Dizzo, thanks for making time.
Love you too, man. Love you too.
And as we always say on Nights at the Ryan Table, we pray that you find a seat at the table. But if you don't, you are always welcome at ours. Love you guys. Later.